Hey everybody, Shop Talk Show number 281. Just Dave and I this week. We're going to end up talking a lot about kind of the new JavaScript landscape. And we have a bunch of questions from you that come at it from different perspectives that we didn't even necessarily plan to make that the theme this week. It just kind of happened that way. So it's going to be lots of fun. Stick around. Mr. Dave, please kick things off.
Shopomaniacs, you're listening to the Sky Talk Show. Pick it up, pick it up, pick it up. I'm Dave Rude Boy Rupert, and with me is Chris Skankin' Pickle Coyier. What's up, Chris?
What's up, what's up, what's up, everybody?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't.
Yeah, we need a horn section. One day we'll be a big podcast, Chris, and we'll afford a horn section every show.
Bring those sounds back. We should have a throwback show back when we used to bring the soundboard.
Oh, that's right. We used to have a soundboard on the show, but I'm remembering our college days when we ran a music show on the old college radio program. It was really just hours of fish, but you know, it's fun. Chris, what's happening today? We have no guests in the studio here, and you're in a brand new studio out in Bend, Oregon.
Yeah, that's right. I'm just coming off a move here, so we like recorded some shows ahead of time, and now we're probably going to do that again while I get settled in. You know, it's always doing stuff here. So I'm just at my new house, which looks quite nice. Quite literally in Bend, Oregon. So I like, you know, I'm trying to be better about audio quality. I'm sure you've followed my journey a little bit here, and you've had your own journey of that. And like, I just remember, like, this is probably years and years ago at this point. One time I had whatever these Yeti ones are. I don't even remember the thing of it. It's got its own little stand, you know? The blue.
The Road.
No, not the Road Podcaster. It's Yeti. It's like a...
Oh, yeah. The Yeti, Snowball, Blue Yeti. Blue
I think
Yeti.
It's blue. The one with... Yeah, it's blue. Not the Snowball. The Snowball is literally like a sphere. So this is my backup one. I don't love the sound on it usually, but it is USB only, so it's really portable, and it has its own stand, and it's just nice for that type of thing. But I used it once, and I was in a hotel room, and I built like a pillow for it around it. And it like worked really well. I was like, this pillow fort was totally good for sound, you know? And I always remembered that. And then like my friend was talking about the show The Defiant Ones on HBO. And like when you're working, it's like a story of like Dr. Dre and the history of music and stuff. It's pretty good.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's apparently like when you like work with Dre, this is because I'm not trying to compare ourselves to Dr. Dre here, just for the record.
I'm pretty sure we're basically the same thing, but go on. I mean, go on. There's some nuance there, but yeah.
Even some of the video they have, they often don't send you to like a tiny little phone booth thing to do your stuff. You just kind of like right there with everybody else. And the microphone sometimes is in like a little cave, you know? And so like, you don't have to, it simulates being in a booth. And anyway, so I was on Amazon and I was like, oh, I should look up to see if there's like a little tiny cave thing that's kind of portable that I could put the microphone in. So it's kind of cool. I don't know that it's entirely working because I don't have it quite set up perfectly for it, but it's a little tiny like padded cave that goes around my mic here. So hopefully, I think it's still a little echoey because I'm in a big giant new house, but hopefully it works out a little bit better.
Oh, sounds good. That's funny. So these, like when they're doing like, you know, hey, whoever come in and rap on my thing, they're like, yeah, I'll go into my like closet and put up a twin mattress on the door and like just rap into a wall. Is that kind of like, on whatever mic?
I'm just catching up on it, but I think you might even be like in the control room.
Oh, okay. All right.
But maybe not.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, they just do like, oh, that's so cool.
I think that works out because then you can give feedback like right to their face. You know, you don't have to like press the button on the thing and be like, ah, oh, that was a good take, but can I get one more?
Yeah. Yeah. Like you talk for like 20 minutes and then, or rap or whatever for like, you know, 5 minutes. And then like everyone, you take the headphones off and you're like, solid cut. And then people are like, that was awful. Let's do it again from the top. Anyway. Well, cool. Hey, let's get into the meat and taters, Chris. We got plenty of questions. So I think today we put together a bit of a JavaScript-y theme here. It's been hot on people's minds, JavaScript. So I think
it's hot on my mind too. I like thinking about all this stuff.
Here we got one, and this is maybe a good, it's sort of a classic Shop Talk question. Here we go. Sean May writes in, hey guys, I'm fairly new developer, still learning the ropes of web dev world. One thing that really concerns me is that it always seems like some key part of the web development process is absolutely essential 1 second and then completely useless the next. One day I'm working with jQuery. The next day I see people laughing at the mere idea of using jQuery in a website. React is great, but then all of a sudden everyone's saying they use Vue. As someone who's been learning on his own, I'm afraid of choosing the wrong horse, so to speak, and being out of step with the newest technologies when I apply for development jobs. Are there any good ways to deal with this? Thing X is dead. Everyone needs to use thing Y problem that seems to constantly happen in the industry. Or is it maybe all bluster and I'll be fine using jQuery and React to my heart's content?
This question will never, ever go away. At least, you know, in the 10 plus years I've been doing this, like everybody's always been worried about this forever. So it's just not, there's no solution to it. There are always going to be, it's depends moments and stuff. Not to write off this question because it's very real. It's just, we probably talked about it 50 times on Chop Talk Show or anything. But one thing did occur to me as this came in, I think this came in last night over email. And I was like, you know what? There's a couple of different ways to think about this in a way. And one of them is that these conversations that you're overhearing are like developers talking to other developers. And for good, because they like that. They're on Twitter. This is their hobby. It's their passion. It's their career. They like it. Me too. I'm a part of this. I like it. I like discussing the merits of different technologies and stuff. But there's this whole separate thing of what is it that you're building and how successful are you at building that thing? That's a totally separate world from that. If you build something, Sean May, that's awesome, you know, that does the thing that it needs to do. Because websites aren't, they don't just live in a bubble. It's not like, I made this amazing website, React. It doesn't do anything, but it's a website. You know, like, no. You're building something else. That doesn't really matter what's under the hood. It matters what that thing is and what that thing does. And if you kill it with that, all these developers will shut up. They'll all be like, oh, I love your thing. You know, they probably won't even look under the hood to see what it was. I mean, not most of them anyway. People are impressed by the thing, whatever you use to build it. Mm-hmm. And it's a totally separate conversation. Anyway.
Yeah, what I'm the thing I've been trying to understand, I think I'm starting to understand, you know, problem sets that things were trying to solve when they were created. And that's maybe a better frame of discussion than hot or not. Like jQuery 2060, let's say, it solves a different set of problems than the web had. Than we're experiencing here in 2017. Although some of those problems still linger around, especially if you're using older browsers or have to support older browsers from that era. React solves a different set of problems, kind of the 2015 problems where, you know, you want like a very good kind of interactive single page app with a really good, well-defined component system, sort of a reaction to Backbone or something like that. And now everyone's using Vue because React has a weird license and Vue is, I think people, you know, React was kind of the only flavor of like single page app you could have for a while. And now Vue is kind of picking up steam. And I think people like Vue, people kind of understand, people kind of like I think, Grokket. And so that's why it's kind of picking up steam. I think when you hear chatter, it's like, it's really just people kind of getting into it and getting excited about a technology, which is a good signal for any technology that people are starting to get excited about something. But it's less like, this is dead, use this. I'm trying to see it like that. Like the problems jQuery solved was a different problem set than the problem set React is trying to solve. And the problem set that React solves is very similar to the problem set that Vue solves. However, Vue is maybe just a different, like a different understanding of the component model that people seem to kind of really like.
Would you call it an evolution of React? I'm not sure, but I would say that Vue wouldn't exist without React.
No. I think it was like a response. I think somebody saw React and were like, could I do a different thing that is maybe a little easier and maybe a little more HTML / attribute based or something?
The Lyft to Uber.
I don't know. That's a good way to describe it. So I don't, you know, I think I need to catch myself like thing is dead. Everyone used thing. Why? But I do. It is kind of. I think once you understand the problem you're trying to solve, and then you can kind of like look at these different frameworks, different libraries, or whatever, and understand the problem they are trying to solve, then you can say like, oh, this is a good one for me. You know, jQuery.
If you're going to think in that way, though, I don't think Vue is giving you any, it's not solving a completely different set of problems than React is. It's just like maybe like some nicer APIs and a better license. And
which is a big deal for me. And that's maybe the thing, too, is like now they're competing on developer convenience. You know, that's why jQuery and prototype are different. You know, no one talks about prototype anymore, but because it had a different API than jQuery, and jQuery's was just better. So
still, when I don't use any kind of new React like thing in the new Java, quote unquote new JavaScript land, I still miss jQuery. Like, this, that API is so friggin' nice that, you know, replacing document.query selector all with just a $, and then even if you do document query selector all, it's like, oh yeah, which thing do I got to use to loop over that set, because like all the new fancy ways to do that aren't everywhere yet, so like what's the safest way to do that and all that. Every time my mind goes through that juggling, I'm just like, ugh. I know, and that's, you know, just mental crap for me that I need to get over. But
you know, my thing is, I started back to Sherry Drafts, # Sherry Drafts. I started a post about like what I miss about jQuery. And like right now, I've been vanilla JavaScript or whatever. And I'm doing a lot of accessibility stuff, which means you're touching at attributes and hiding and removing and updating. And, you know, it's a lot of work, but in vanilla JavaScript, when you're like, okay, remove attribute hidden, you know, because I want to show it, the if it does not have the attribute hidden, it just bombs out. It's just like, sorry, JavaScript quit running, like we don't do websites anymore. So you have to go like, okay, if has attribute hidden, then remove attribute hidden. And you kind of have to do this for like every single property you're kind of working with. You can maybe like do a function that goes through and assures that all the attributes exist or whatever, but it's just been, I don't know, my, you know, like when like in jQuery you could just be like $.items.remove attribute remove adder hidden and just remove them all, you know. In native JavaScript, you're now like doing a for loop, and then you have to like test if that attribute exists, and then you have to remove it. And that's all to say, jQuery was just using what JavaScript does, but it was just a nicer API.
And then once you've written those like 6 or 8 lines instead of one, you're less confident in what you've written.
It's harder to debug. It's harder to, you know, it's harder to kind of inspect or read human readability. It's a little bit of a a less than ideal experience. However, I will say I've been into like some very large jQuery projects, and I do wonder if jQuery made it really easy to write a lot of bad JavaScript, if that makes sense. like it just was so easy.
Sure,
like,
and we have a question about that, like, I think, in a minute. So maybe we'll...
And that's not jQuery's fault. That's undiscerning devs' fault. But I think that was kind of one thing, is it made it really easy to just kind of like, well, I'm just going to select the whole page and whittle it down to the thing I want. And, you know, it's kind of, I feel like it maybe was so easy. It was easy to write a lot of bad, if that makes sense. So, and that's such a weird nuanced opinion. I don't want to necessarily bring down jQuery with that. So that could have been anything. So
this episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by Pistol Lake. That's pistol like a little gun, and lake like where you go water skiing. PistolLake.com/shoptalk is the URL to go to. That's important because it's 20% off all the Uday shirts you buy. What is a Uday shirt? What is Pistol Lake? They're an apparel company, and kind of an amazing apparel company, one that did a lot of R&D. They spent 2 years researching and creating a special fabric called Uday, which is, get this, it's kind of amazing. It's a combination of eucalyptus pulp and recycled bottles, and the end result is, and I'm wearing one right now, it's a stretchy, moisture wicking, really classily done shirt. I love it. It's active wear, but it's kind of an everything shirt. I can wear it to a meeting, even, you know, a fancy meeting. I could wear it to the gym. I can wear it to a 5-day hackathon if I want to, because the way that it's just built, it moisture wicks and it never smells. It's kind of just an amazing shirt. It's an integral part of my new wardrobe. So I just want to welcome Pistol Lake as the new sponsor on Shop Talk Show. PistolLake.com/ShopTalk. Love them. Get 20% off your Uday shirts. Use coupon code ShopTalk and go to that URL.
All right, let's move on to the next question there. Chris, is it Magnus wrote in?
Yeah, Magnus writes in. We're going to just go on a theme here, as we do occasionally on the show. Magnus Gare writes in, so I don't understand the whole React, Preact, Vue, landscape. What is it really for? And when would it make sense to learn this and eventually use them? I build relatively simple sites for clients with a CMS behind it. For example, WordPress. I'll write in some custom fields, make it look all neat and tidy, call it a day for the most part. I get the impression this is not really the way to do stuff anymore. And it's all about the scalable JavaScript frameworks. But I don't really understand the use case for your average content site. Thoughts or input? I think as a transition from that last question to this question, I find on your average content site that I reached for jQuery quite a bit, right? And I just thought, just because I had a question about this in the last workshop I gave, that somebody was like, okay, React, I laid out all these advantages for it and all when you might reach for it and all this stuff. And I felt like I made a pretty compelling case for it, I thought. And then, but somebody just had a minor question. They're just like, well, okay, how does React help you do DOM stuff? Like, how do you do closest, and how do you do, you know, like find, and how do you do all these other things? And I was like, well, one, it doesn't have any helpers of any kind of that regard. Two, even those things, you don't, like, if you're going kind of vanilla JavaScript and you're in fairly new land, like, even most of those things that you're familiar with from jQuery land have native equivalents now, believe it or not, and they're often named the same thing that jQuery is. And three, React doesn't have any of those helpers on purpose, because you never ever do that in React land. I hate to say never ever, because there's always some kind of weird reason why you might have to, but you do not handle the DOM yourself almost ever in React. You like set up what it looks like, and React does the kind of DOM handling stuff for you. And if that's the first time you've ever heard anybody say that, that hopefully is like the moment where you can start understanding this thing a little bit more. You like design a template, and then that's the last time you ever deal with the DOM directly. It like handles ever changing that for you.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's like, how do I use closest in PHP? It kind of, you don't. It's sort of, you know, you use React is how you generate and manage your DOM, not how you manipulate it. And you really kind of don't want to manipulate. You want to respond. You tell your, you like program your React components to respond to something. But so I guess what
you've already said the word single page app in this, that would be one of those reasons why you might reach for a library like this, is you want that SPA feel.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is that one of them?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. There's kind of some irony in this question. You know, when would I want to ever use, you know, like a JavaScript framework? And I use WordPress and build simple sites. Well, the irony here is Facebook, or sorry, WordPress uses React in its admin section to help, like, you.
Well, to be clear, it does it in WordPress.com's admin. I don't think they use it in, like...
That's fair.
Yeah.
The regular admin. But, like, so WordPress... But, and then WordPress is also, like, kind of wrapped up in some hot drama and that they're moving away because of the license stuff
we
kind of talked about. You know, WordPress, I think, is, you know, if you're familiar with that, you might... be able to answer your question here, and like, why does WordPress use React? And I think it's just to create a kind of hyper, like, just kind of rich UI, a rich internet application, if we want to use 1990s terminology.
Well, think of what it needs to do. Is different. It's the back end, you know, the admin area. Think of what you're doing there. You're clicking new post, and an editor comes up, and you're editing the post, and you're changing the tags, and you're changing the category, and you're doing a drop down for the author, and you're putting you're saying that this post is going to be published 2 months from now on a Thursday. And then you save it, and it's in draft format. And then you go back and be like, oh, this user doesn't exist yet. Let me click over to the users area and search, and then add them. And that's a big form that has their email address and their avatar. And they're like, it's very app-like. There's lots of form elements. There's lots of state. So think about, you know, like, are you logged in? Are you not logged in? What page are you looking at? What are the values of these 15 things on the screen that I'm looking at? You know, I know that there's not a, like, the line is very gray between what's a website and what's a web app, and that's not a very useful distinction and all that. I'm very much on board with that. But imagine how much state is happening when you're looking at that admin screen of WordPress. It's easy to see. It's all over the place. And that's what libraries like React and Vue and Ember and Preact and Moon and Svelte and even Polymer and stuff help handle. They're state management machines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think it helps. I think, like, I mean, I think what the best thing you can maybe do, I always go back to this a lot, is the WestBoss React for web developers. Is that what? React?
Sure.
React for Beginners is, I think, what it's called. WestBoss has a great course. And really, all you need to do is kind of watch the video. He kind of has this, like, this kind of sample menu, basically, and you like update things, and it updates real time, and then you add things to the cart by just clicking a button, and then you update the price, and the price in the cart updates. It's kind of this weird, you know, and you can like make things sell out in the admin portion, and they sell out, you know, reflected instantly in the
it's all front end portion. Ball of state, like, oh, what's in the cart? What's in the inventory? What's the user like? It's just this big ball of state that is handled by literally the concept of state in React.
Yeah, and that, you know, that example is maybe a little like reductive or too simple, because I think you want some like checks and balances, so somebody doesn't just like accidentally click out, you know. You want like a, are you sure this is what you want it to do, you know. I don't think you like instantly want it on the front end to kind of lock out, but, you know, I think there's some like good principles there, and you can start seeing how this would work in a chat app. You'd want it to update. I know y'all are using a lot of React on CodePen, the project section, which is a great example, because it's like,
yeah, our you new drag dashboard, a file in, React you want to. I mean, really, that. We're going to eventually the whole app will be
like all in React. So
probably, I would think. No. So, I mean, I have this slide even that I'm looking at from my workshop that was like, okay, so why are you reaching? It's just this area of the workshop was designed just to answer this kind of question, is that one is that single page app feel. And just even that, I think, compels a lot of people, because it really can be quite fast to click, have some new data arrive, or have data already be available there, and have that page really kind of instantly change. React is very, that's when people talk about React being fast and these apps being fast. It means it's really efficient at updating the DOM, and all of a sudden that new stuff is there and you're like, oh, wow, look at how quickly that changed. That felt really good. Not only did it happen quickly on the screen, but the whole browser didn't refresh. Well, if you're, Magnus, if you're working on a WordPress site, as fast as you make that WordPress site, still, generally, you click on a post and the whole page refreshes and the new post is there. You can make that feel pretty good, but I don't think you can ever beat that single page app feel where the page doesn't refresh at all. So there's that. Then there's all this state stuff that we're talking about in React, and the add-ons to it, like Redux, giving you ways to manage that state in a really smart way. And then there's this whole concept of so many designers and developers are thinking about breaking things into bits. I mean, we've been doing that forever, but React is like, make components and then piece together your site with components. That's what we're kind of suggesting as a way to use it. And both designers and developers are like, great, I love components. Components are how we think. Components are what our design library and pattern library is built out of. Components, wonderful. And developers are like, cool, I can put some of the logic in components and some of the logic in higher order components, and it matches. Oh, that's great. And some people are like, oh, this DOM stuff, it's so hard, like you were saying, with, you know, vanilla being difficult with that sometimes. Oh, React deals with all that DOM stuff for you. No more of this like reaching around and traversing the DOM and dealing with all that DOM stuff yourself. You just don't have to, and that can feel really good. You know, you download Create React app and it's like, oh, not only is it giving me something to easily get started with the build tools and stuff, but it has some suggestions of how you might organize your project. You could argue that that's why things like Ruby on Rails took off, is because there's some like suggested organizational things for React. People love to be told what to do. And React is, it's less opinionated than many other frameworks about this, but still it kind of suggests some things. And people love being told essentially how to structure your code. It's not just the wild, wild west. You do it this way. You use these structures.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have even more in this list, but I think, okay, so if you're Magnus here, like, I know we've just said a whole bunch of words. Like, if he's just building a WordPress site and just, you know, making some fields and clicking around in it, should we be convincing him to try some new JavaScript, or should we be saying, no, don't even worry about it, just stay where you are?
It's tough. I think we kind of said it in the last show, but I think it's like, when, if it doesn't make sense to you, it's not for you right now. Like, I don't think it, again, back to the problem sets thing, I don't think you have the problem sets that React, Preact, Vue, etc. are trying to solve, you know? So I think it's really important to kind of like recognize you're not in, those aren't your problems yet. But it's a good thing to understand what problems these solve, so that when you, are presented with these problems, like a really stateful application, and you're trying to write it in like 7,000 lines of jQuery, but it's really just like 10 lines of React Preact code. I think you're going to, once you understand the problems that they're solving, you can use it for these problems. So, the next time a client like comes to you and is like, I want to build a form builder, but I need like 70,000 different rules when somebody's like filling out a form, based on things they selected before they selected the thing, like a cascading decision tree. At that point, I would start looking for a React Preact situation, just because there's so much state. That's the key word. Yeah. There's so much state that you're going to want to respond to the state. You want to be reactive, to that state. So
and remember that even content can and often is part of state. So, well, here, convince me on this, Dave. Let's say I want to rewrite CSS tricks in Vue. And this just crossed my mind the other day. I think that would be really fun. I think it'd be fun to build little components for article cards and little user cards and make, you know, the header and the footer and all my little sidebar things into components and piece together. It wouldn't be tremendously hard. I think it would be pretty fun to build the front end of my WordPress site in Vue and then do some routing, you know, pull in whatever Vue uses for routing and get my URL, you know, set up the router so it matches exactly what I have now. And then use the WordPress API, the API that ships with WordPress now that you can get your hands on whatever content you need in JSON, and then give that JSON to Vue and have it kind of take over. So you click on, you know, you click back to the home page and it re-renders the home page. And if it has to ask for some data from the API, it does and stuff. Like, I think it would be a big project. It would probably, you know, just me by myself, it would probably take me a couple of months. If somebody knew exactly what they're doing, they could probably do it in a couple of weeks or a month, I would think. And it would be fun. It would be fast and stuff. I would only really consider doing it if we could also set up the server side rendering component, where WordPress probably by itself just still it still just renders the page with regular templates.
Page that you want,
but yeah. That concerns me a little bit because I probably wouldn't use like WordPress template rendering to do that. I'd probably give up on all that. And have it, you know, server side rendered from the Vue code, like mm-hmm. you know what I mean. So you're not updating two template systems. It'd be like kind of having two websites. It would really be a pain in the butt, I think, because there's ways to have these new JavaScript frameworks render do the JavaScript processing in Node or whatever, and create static HTML and you serve that. So I think it would be a lot of work. Would it be worth it for me? If I wanted to hire you to help me or something, would you talk me out of it?
That's a good question. I yes and no. I don't think CSS Tricks is a highly stateful application. Although, you know, you do have like the Lodge or you still do, right? Like, or you well, used
the
to
Lodge
have
is gone. There's forums there. That would be probably pretty hard to rebuild.
Yeah, but I'm thinking of like any kind of thing you'd want to like show like to a logged in user or something. I think as a content site, you'd maybe benefit from just a straight server render, as small and least complicated as possible. But that said, CSS Tricks over the last 10 something years, you know, your component set has stayed the same, right? You have an article, you have a like article preview, you have a footer, a header, navigation, you have maybe some ads in a sidebar, like a sidebar kind of component. You have in comments, you know, these like, I guess that's 8 components. I'm counting on my fingers. Those haven't changed. Those are the 8 components you use to build your site every time. And I'm sure just because you use WordPress, how you currently update your site is you copy the Vue folder, you copy your theme folder, and you paste a new theme folder. And you'd maybe still do that a bit, but I think it would just change your development habits to like, now if I want to change something on my site, I'm really just kind of editing components, you know, I want to like, oh, I'm not happy with how the homepage renders. I'm going to kind of work on the homepage component. I guess that's another one. Plus the article preview card component. So now now you're just working on two components. You're not like reboiling your whole website down. You're just kind of playing with components. And because you have these components, you can, and you just need JSON to hydrate them, mm-hmm. you can drop that in a CodePen projects or wherever. And like it does not care where it lives. It doesn't, it's not tied to WordPress at all. So I think that would be a very cool.
Yeah, we didn't mention that at all, is that kind of isolation of components thing, of which you can tie design to that too and say, this design, nothing bleeds in, nothing bleeds out kind of thing. That's appealing to a lot of people as well.
Yeah. I have a client right now, and we're kind of getting real deep on this question, but I have a client right now, and they have a lot of business logic baked into their Vue template. You know, it's kind of a bunch of if statements, like if it's something from here, do something here. And that's business logic that has to live somewhere. But as I'm, you know, when it's kind of buried in like a front end template, like the business logic gets buried in the front end template, I think that's kind of a bad thing. You know, I'm starting to realize like really the views should just respond to flags in some kind of model, like true or false, like, okay, show the preview here, or show the date here, or show a sponsored link, you know, or something, you know, like the view should just be like, okay, if this flag is true, I'm going to render this, or if it's not, I render this. Like I'm starting to agree with the kind of logicless template point of view, but more so, I think there has to be logic in your template, but I think it should be very dumb logic, like very like binary bit flips would be. And so like when your database WordPress spits things out, you're just responding to things like if, you know, custom fields dot true or what, you know, or custom fields dot sponsored equals true, show the sponsored link notification or sponsored link, you know, badge. So, oh no, Chris.
So what if I told you, though, I came back and said, the only reason I'm really interested in doing this is the speed feel. I just like it, how when sites are like, when I click things and they're just like, boom, they're there. And that's what I would get out of this. And that's all I care about. I don't care about nothing else. Would you?
I think that's good. But again, with a content site, I think as much as we like to think people just love browsing our websites, I don't think people browse websites. I think with content sites, they show up to read a thing and then they're out. So like you're like bounce rate is probably very high, but people have a pretty good time on site as they kind of skim or read through the article. So I think like you're penalizing that first load, unless you can get the server render going, but you're penalizing that first load to have an experience optimized for multiple clicks. And my feelings about websites, people don't click websites. So unless they have like an objective, but you know, if it's something like an e-commerce site or something, I mean, now you have to kind of funnel, like they go to Macy's.com and they start going to menswear and they go to, you know, sport pants and they go choose which neon color of sports pants they want.
From it the most, because
yeah,
I mean, and you can always optimize that first page load, but you know, they're not really a customer unless they're clicking around. And
right, and then
I'd probably just talk myself out of it. You know, like you're right that I do have it's a fairly high bounce rate, and I'm okay with that because it's just like people landing to get what they need and they're out or whatever. And it would be fun to work on, but I just don't. There's not enough to warrant it on CSS Tricks. So it's just kind of like it's too much. It's not the right fit for it. I am kind of interested to see if there'll be themes and such. That like, why is, do you think there's a theme sitting there right now in React or something, just in the free themes, that completely only uses the WordPress API and you know, React rendered views? Like, what does that exist? Like, why can't that just be generically exist? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
is WordPress encourage it or not encourage it?
Yeah, I don't know. And there may be.
We often talk about WordPress there, as a stand-in, you know. I should mention that there's a lot of CMSs out there, and a lot of them have APIs, and the same kind of conversation applies to any of them. It's just...
Yeah, Ghost, Craft, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. And I'm going to be a lot more interested in Craft as we move on here, because our new office in Bend is CodePen and Craft.
Oh, nice. Nice.
They're all
in Bend. You know?
Yeah.
These guys I've been working with, they use Craft plus Angular a lot. Oh, so, nice. Pretty cool setup. So,
and it's not just because we're sharing office. I mean, Craft is sweet.
Dude, Craft is.
And I don't even know all that much about it, but I know that it's like a better evolution of Expression Engine. And I like how that it encourages like the setting up of data in an intelligent CMS like way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it makes, you know, you hear this a lot too, as software is all about compromises. You know, you're sure. What we just described here is like, are you going to make the compromise to optimize. Do you want the beautiful experience or do you want the instant page load? That's we're making the compromise. I think Kraft has made a lot of great compromises in how they do things, just how people want to work in a CMS and how people want to render pages. The view structure is just elegant. So,
you know what? This brings up another thing, because we got a couple of responses on Twitter about this. Is we were talking about that, like having that single content field, but being able to manage what's in the content without having to put a bunch of like bespoke HTML crap in there that we always rally against, you know, because you think that's going to bite you in the butt. There should be a CMS way to manage, like, you like having that content area be built from interesting different chunks, like paragraph, paragraph, you know, three boxes, paragraph, image, paragraph, slider, you know. And you shouldn't have to do that with HTML in one giant text area. That's like not the way to approach that, probably, from a CMS perspective. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's, and then the extension of that is, but I still should be able to access all that content with essentially one API call or one. It should still just all return to me as one big chunk of content. I don't want to ask individually for all that stuff. And then people wrote in like, oh, there's this add-on for Drupal called Paragraphs. That's what it does. Kraft CMS handles it with a thing called Matrix Fields. And I was looking around in WordPress and found a thing. I'll probably do a post on it because I think it was every CMS, like not every CMS, but mature CMSs have a good way of handling this kind of thing. And I think that's fascinating.
Paving the cow paths. Uh-huh.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by Evie Events. Say you're having an event. You need to create a page for the event. You need to sell tickets for the thing. That's what Evie Events does, and it's great at it. Head over to eveyevents.com and check it out. You're going to even make more money doing it this way because they don't take any cut out of ticket sales. It's just a flat fee, $20 a month per event. It's awesome. So whether you're selling like 100 tickets or 10,000 tickets, it doesn't matter. It's just $20 a month per event. You also get paid really fast. So the ticket sales get deposited to your account within 3 days because it works through Stripe, and it just immediately goes to Stripe and Stripe gets it to your bank. It's great. They've helped event organizers make millions of dollars. So lots of people using this thing. Companies like DraftKings, Shopify, Caltech, Harvard, lots more use Evie to sell tickets to their events. There's even a Shopify app. So if you already have a Shopify app because you're selling other things, or you want to sell swag for your event or products of any kind, maybe you're on Shopify, maybe you can use Shopify, you can sell the tickets to your events that way too. It all integrates all together. So that's kind of amazing. And then it's it uses the Liquid templating engine. You have full design control, full control over the event pages of the thing. It's amazing. You know, you get the tickets are delivered as PDFs, but it works through iOS and the Passbook system too, because some people like that, and you can check people into the events. Everything you need to do the event. It's pretty great. They have a 7-day free trial with all the features turned on, so you might as well go try that. Try Evie. Keep more of your money. Truly brand your event. Start selling tickets at eveyevents.com, or, you know, it's on the Shopify App Store if you're going that way.
All right, let's continue our jaunt down JavaScript lane, Chris, with this question from Shane on Spaghetti Code. What is spaghetti code? Oh, I've heard this term tossed around a bit and vaguely understand it as piecemeal code written in a very ad hoc way. But is there a hard and fast definition? How can I tell I'm looking at spaghetti code? How do I know when I'm writing spaghetti code? What about angel hair or linguine code?
Have you ever triggered a click in jQuery? You're writing spaghetti code. I don't know.
Oh. What is spaghetti code, Chris?
An example I've used in the past is something like being able to tell if a user is like logged in or logged out. Like you have an app and there's probably some main way to log out, but there's probably secondary actions that would log you out. Like you delete your account, so it has to log you out too. Or you've performed some nefarious action that we've detected on the back end, so we're going to log you out or something. And how do you know that a user's logged in or out. Like we talked about state a whole lot in React and other frameworks, there'd probably be just like a user part of state and it would be, you know, logged in or not. You know, you'd have some kind of UUID or something if you're logged in, and if you're not, it wouldn't be there. There's some single source of truth for the knowledge that you're logged in or you're not. Or you could just write an app that just really just handles it in a just ad hoc way. You'd be like, okay, well, if you're logged in, then I'm going to reach into the header and I'm going to find a little place and I'm going to drop in a user avatar up there manually. And then I'm going to append a little menu that when they click the user avatar, it makes the little menu appear and they can click a log out button there too. And then I'm somewhere else in the app. I'm on some totally unrelated page. And all of a sudden a new feature comes along and I really need to know if the user's logged in or out. And I don't have any way to ask because all I ever did was just reach into the DOM and add this avatar there. So I guess to find out if the user's logged in or out, I'm just going to like query selector all for the header and see if that avatar is sitting up there. And if it is, I guess they're logged in. And if it's not, I guess they're not. So now the logic of my app is basically the DOM has become my source of truth for this information if the user's logged in or not.
Yeah. If avatar, they must be logged in.
they must be logged in.
How could that break ever in the future?
And if they're, and then, a log out is triggered. How am I going to trigger a log out from this other page? I don't know. I guess I'll just trigger a click on that log out button and that will trigger the code that I've written elsewhere to log somebody out because I've triggered a click, you know, that should do it instead of calling a function. So you can see how this is nothing compared to like really bad spaghetti code is nothing. It's lacking a single source of truth. And it's like events are being fired and the DOM is being questioned. I'm doing a terrible job of explaining it. But.
I think you're doing good. I think that's a good like bases. What you kind of described are these like little thin strings, these brittle structures that connect two pieces of code, right? You're like, well, I wrote all this logged in logic, but I'd never like set a cookie. So we'll just check if there's an avatar. You created this thin brittle string to connect. And I think that's kind of the thing about spaghetti code. And, I could actually go on to say spaghetti code is code that you did not write. Therefore, it must be burned down to the ground. I think that's every developer's definition of spaghetti code. But I think I like your definition, Chris, because I think it's just like these brittle structures versus like a good structure,
maybe how you would have done that is too. You're going to make a login API. And when you log in the app through the UI, it like calls this API that does the stuff for you. However you want to it could be any framework, could be vanilla JavaScript, could be anything. But there's a source of truth for the data, whether you're logged in or not. And there's APIs that do the stuff that it needs to do. So later on, you're building a fifth feature and it needs to know this information. It asks the same place for that information. If it needs to log you out, it calls that logout API and it does the stuff that it needs to do. That at least then you're starting your way towards not spaghetti code, but code that's structured and makes sense. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's you. If you use something like Rails, this is always my, you know, the Rails versus Sinatra. I don't know. These are not cool anymore. So it's really hard to, anyway. But if you ever use these and kind of, you know, I think like there's probably some, anyway, Rails was always very big on conventions. Like this is the Rails way to do it. You if you're logging in, you want it to do this and return this. This is the Rails way to do it. Sinatra was kind of way more spaghetti, way more just like, you know, Rails has a lot to it. We're just do your own thing. But some of the Rails conventions still stuck around, but you kind of also knew like when you're just kind of phoning it in and doing a cheap fix as opposed to like a very well thought out code structure. And that's where it all comes to me is like structure. Does the structure of your code look like spaghetti or does it look like, you know, a really like understandable, really well-defined piece of code. So that's hard. So, you know, I don't know. I've ran across people who like wrote all of their code in big multi-thousand line single files before. And to me, that was spaghetti code. But to them, it was also just very structured because the whole app was in one file and they could just find and replace and, or like, you know, find and file to get to where they needed to be. So different people have different perspectives, Chris.
The metaphor itself, if the word spaghetti is still lost on you, is imagine spaghetti has these little strands of noodles and they're all tangled up with each other. Imagine that with code and you trying to understand that code. Like, okay, where is all the, like, if I'm on this page and this happens, imagine trying to follow and figure out in the app all the different things that happen when there's no structure that guarantees what's going to happen. Imagine you following that little noodle of spaghetti through the dish and it goes this and it touches this and it touches this and it touches this. And that's the metaphor of spaghetti there, is that it's hard to reason about.
Then all of a sudden you're Lady in the Tramping with Kamal from DevOps. And it was just a long trip. And now you're French and Kamal.
All right. That was very satisfying ending to that, I think. So do you have anything to, do you want to do a show on the Dev Summit stuff, or is that?
Oh yeah, I guess we can talk about that. I just got back from the Microsoft Web Summit, Edge Web Summit. It was basically Microsoft's Edge's browser kind of day. And Chris, I gotta say, this was a cool event. Ray Bango encouraged me to head out I went and it was very Twitter studded event. I'm going to use that term, but a lot of people I follow from Twitter and really wanted to talk to were there. There was Jason Miller from Preact, Sean Larkin from Webpack, Ken Wheeler, who's a big React guy. There was a lot of people there who I just had wanted to ask them questions. Paul Irish was there, so I got to ask some weird questions to Paul Irish, which I like to do. And it just was a good time. And Marcy Sutton, who's been on the show, I got to ask her a bunch of accessibility questions because I'm doing a lot of accessibility. It was really good. And Edge kind of talked about their new APIs kind of the first day. And then they had like a small team of people that went to the Microsoft campus. We went to the mothership and kind of met with their developers, met with like the Chakra team, and kind of like got to ask questions, really kind of give feedback to the Edge browser and what we think. Progressive web apps was a big topic of conversation. So all in all, it was a great event. And honestly, I've benefited from this event like a lot because of my brain got expanded in these conversations. So it's pretty cool, Chris.
Okay, good. So, I mean, was there any like announcement that you're interested in? I think there was some like grid stuff that was like, hey, we're not only, I mean, Edge has been supporting grid for a little bit now. They announced that and then shipped that. And now are like almost pulling ahead with grid support.
Yeah, they, Edge is, it's in beta now or in the insiders, Windows Insider track, but I think it officially launches October 17th.
Oh, so Grid at all has not quite dropped.
Not dropped completely, but it's in the next update and it's working beautifully and works and it's good. I use it every day now. So what's going to be tricky is you'll have to open up IE11 to find out what your site looks without Grid. So, and then you have to open up IE10 to see what your site looks like with weird flexbox, and then you have to open up IE9 to see what your site looks without any kind of flexbox.
We actually have a show coming up, I think, where we're going to specifically talk about cross-browser testing.
Okay.
Just because I think that will be an interesting thing to discuss. It's part of all of our lives to some degree.
Yeah, well, and I think it's you know, it's really important to check out other browsers because, I think we're all guilty of coding for Chrome at some point in our lives and thinking that's the baseline and then being surprised when that's not the baseline. So I think that's something to consider when you're developing. What I think is very interesting, people, you know, I was like, I'm at MS Edge Summit, and a lot of people on Twitter were like, tell them to fix their browser or whatever. And I'm like, oh boy, what? What do you like? What in particular are you looking for? And people kind of couldn't give any answers, but they're like grid and then animations and SVG, which are a big thing, which Edge really hasn't really said anything on it. And I need to poke them on that some more. But grid is coming. But what's interesting, you got a sense, and there's a good talk from Greg Whitworth from Edge on the I can put a link in the show notes, but it's called Decisions, Decisions, Decisions. And it's basically like they take feedback and they browsers will take feedback and implement things based on your feedback. So you really kind of want to be kind of a vocal user or vocal advocate of a feature or something like that, just to get it enough attention that the browsers have to fix it, because they have a limited number of man hours or people hours to fix things. They have a limited number of, I don't know, there's just a limited number of things that a browser can work on in a shipment. And Edge is currently shipping every 6 months or so. I think like it's really helpful to that they are open to feedback. I think I'd encourage everyone to kind of like, if there's something Edge isn't doing, you should look at it. But Edge has done a lot of work in basically replacing their whole, they're basically fixing all of IE on the fly. Like they redid their whole DOM tree structure. Parser, they're redoing their JavaScript engine, they're redoing their security features, like all on the fly while the browser is being used in production. So it's a pretty cool,
yeah. Like, Dave, you forgot to use the obligatory metaphor, which is replacing a jet engine while the plane is still flying.
That is actually the
metaphor. That's the one Mozilla uses, so you can't use that one. You have to use a different one.
Oh. But that's exactly what they're doing, and it's really impressive that they're like gone through and they,
it is pretty like, cool. I don't mean to, I just think it's funny. Cause at one point I heard like 5 Mozilla employees use that metaphor. I'm like, whoa, they must've got a memo that says required metaphor usage.
Here's top 10 metaphors to describe browser development. Next post on smashing. Mozilla, not to, like pull this away from Edge too much, but Mozilla is actually doing a lot of the same work, like this servo thing.
Yeah,
that they're.
I think it's exciting. I think at the end of it, developers don't need to worry about it too much, because the whole goal with all this work is don't ruin developers' lives, right? But then when it's done, hopefully they can like move faster and better. But who really benefits is users, right? Because all of a sudden the web is a bunch of way faster.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and yeah. Then. Yeah, and like if something's not working on your, like browsers want to know, because it's almost like, well, that's weird. We built this thing and we have like a million test cases, so it's weird it's not working. So we'd like to know when it's not working. So so that's kind of a cool, I don't know. I think it's browsers need to know when they broke something on your site. So because they probably didn't mean to, but they might have. So. Anyhow, all right. Well, it's good. If you have Edge questions, I guess I can try to answer them. But it's a pretty good browser, y'all. So, anyway,
let's see. Do we have 5 minutes or something, or no minutes?
I think we're hitting into no minutes. I think I'm late for a robot stand up. I'm just gonna say
that's cool. Just jiggle your mouse a little bit. All right.
All right. Well, cool. Thanks everyone for downloading this and your podcatcher choice. Be sure to star heart, favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs. Get a brand new one, because people want to hire people like you. And follow us on Twitter at ShopTalkShow for tens of tweets a month. Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say?
ShopTalkShow.com.